From KCRW.com, this is DNA. I'm Frances Anderton.
Could it be that he's in something related, such as design or architecture?
Design.
Architecture.
Design.
Architecture.
DNA. I'm an architect.
The designer called
me. DNA.
If you can 3D print guns and food, how about clothing? Michael Schmidt tells us about making printed plastic move with the body of Dieter Fontes. And later in the show, Edward Lifson introduces Michael Govan's vision for the new LACMA as part of his series of Wilshire Boulevard stories. But first, designer Michael Schmidt has spent decades cladding Cher, Madonna, Lady Gaga and other supernovas in stunning costumes made of materials that don't fit the usual definition of fabric, from Legos to chainmail of sterling silver links to razor blades. Now he's testing the possibilities of printed powdered plastic in a dress designed for burlesque artist Dieter Fontes. That dress and some of his others will be on show at LACMA Wednesday night in an event produced by the Costume Council. And there he'll also talk to design journalist and A+R store owner Rose Apodaca. In a foretaste of what you'll hear Wednesday, Rose interviewed Michael for DNA as they prepared for their big night at LACMA. He explained that his career got started when he moved from Kansas City to New York.
When I came to New York in 83, I started by making jewelry out of found objects, things I would find on the streets and around Canal Street and so forth. And I started doing metal work and created a dress that found its way into a store, a metal mesh dress. And Cher walked by, saw the dress, went inside and inquired about me. And they actually wouldn't even tell her how to reach me, but I had a friend who worked in the store who slipped her my number.
Ow.
And so I got a call from Cher, and we became fast friends. And she started then giving my things away as gifts to her friends, her rock and roll friends like Bon Jovi and Tina Turner, et cetera, et cetera. And that's how I started working with entertainers.
And in fact, you mentioned Tina Turner. I think one of the most iconic images in rock history is that image of Tina Turner rocking it in that mesh dress. And that is actually a Michael Schmidt work, mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a Herb Ritts photograph that she actually didn't want to wear. She just was like, oh, I've done all that already. And Herb said, no, we're going to do this dress and I think you're going to like it. So I did it, and she ended up loving it, and it ended up being the centerfold of her album. And one of my favorite memories of my entire career was working with Tina. And we would sit in our hotel room, and she would try on my things and go through all of her famous Tina Turner moves, and it would just be me and her. And it was astonishing. You know, you can clearly see that that would be one of the great memories.
How incredible. And just very briefly, and then we'll move on to talking about this innovation in 3D, but another very iconic dress, which has also made its way, I believe, into the exhibition, is the dress you created for Debbie Harry of Blondie fame. And that's a dress that you individually stitched on, what is it, 3,000 razor blades?
3,500 razor blades, yes, which were each individually dulled on sandpaper and then stitched onto this gown in a shingling effect, which will actually be on display at LACMA on the 12th of June.
Fantastic. And so actually that brings to mind even this idea of, you know, you've worked with silver mesh, with razor blades, with all kinds of very unconventional materials. In fact, one also that's coming more recently to mind is the bubble dress that you fashioned out of, was it plastic bubbles for Lady Gaga?
Yes, that was for the cover of Rolling Stone.
Oh, and also Madonna, by the way. That's another artist that you've created some very just out of this world kind of pieces. Working with these enormous stars and being able to create items that are, you know, just fantasy for most of us. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, what you get out of it?
You know, for me, working in fashion is a medium for me, but I don't do fashion per se because I'm not interested in working seasonally. Most designers work seasonally, which involves a sort of planned obsolescence. You design something that will be specifically out of fashion in 6 months so that people have to buy more. This is not interesting to me. And I also am interested in the process of creating my own fabrics, which you can't really do, you know, on a wide scale. You really, you know, I like to create things that are made on a one-off basis because then I can move on to the next, and I constantly get to explore innovative new techniques in fabric development.
So actually, if we can interrupt one there, one of those fabric developments was something, a sort of patches of Swarovski. Actually, why don't you tell me a little bit about it? It was a material that you created to do some costumes, I believe, right?
The crystal mesh?
I think it was the crystal mesh. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I work with metal a lot and crystal, and I enjoy the process of adapting unusual materials to the body, challenging materials, materials that are often hostile to the body. Metals, plastics, glass, wood.
So give us an example of the kind of metal patchwork, I guess you could say, that you work with to create a larger swath of fabric.
Well, metal as a material and being able to adapt that to the body is inherently challenging. And you work with special tools. We've invented a number of specialty tools in order to allow us to be able to work with these materials and create fluid, flexible, articulated materials. And this is something that can be adapted to the material, and it has a tactile feeling that is unlike anything else. It's really sensual, it's nice to touch, it's pliable, and it throws light unlike anything else.
And these are all factors that are highly important for the clients that are wearing them, because they're rock stars. Mm-hmm,
indeed. I mean, stage wear is a very different phenomenon than obviously what you would wear on the streets. Entertainers are required to do so much more these days. There's so much more competition. There's so much more of a voracious public need for new imagery. So they constantly have to create new looks for themselves.
But also these looks have to perform on stage, is what you're saying. So not only are you having to piece together these materials that are, you know, a little bit more challenging to work with, but they also have to sustain all the movements that some of these stars put them under.
Right, right. And they have to be on tour for a year and a half.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. And to that extent, I know that when you, like Madonna's most recent tour, you've worked on several tours with her, right?
Yeah, of course.
You actually had to create multiples of some otherwise one-of-the-kind kind of designs, right? But they weren't one-of-a-kind because you had to do two or three of them.
Yeah, you always have to do two or three of a piece because it's inevitable that they will take a certain amount of wear and tear. Although with Madonna's, it was very interesting. She wore the very same pieces throughout the entire tour, which I was very pleased that they were not only as durable as that to hold up for the amount of abuse that she puts things through, and I mean that in a good way, but once she inhabits a piece of clothing, she does not like to change it. It becomes part of her persona on stage, and she doesn't like to, you know, move beyond that piece. She doesn't even want you to change the slightest thing about it. It's very interesting.
Almost like a talisman of sorts.
It's really true.
So that leads us, though, to one piece that you recently created, which is an absolute one of a kind, and that is the 3D work of fashion that you created with architect Francis Patonti and Shapeways for the figure of Dita Von Teese. First of all, why did you even do this in the first part?
Well, 3D printing is something that I've been really fascinated with for about 25 years. But I've been watching this technology develop for some time because it hasn't yet been approachable except for architects and hardcore industrial design. Now it's something that is, you can buy desktop 3D printers. We know this now. But my challenge was to take this material and try and create something that, because most of the pieces of fashion that have been created out of this technology are sculptural in nature and extraordinary pieces. I mean, there have been some astonishing things created. But for me, the challenge, as in everything that I do, is to take these static materials and render them malleable, adaptable, movable, fluid, sensual, you know, and I wanted to see if I could create a work that would take this inherently rigid material and render it supple, you know? So that's always the challenge for me, and this is no different. And in doing so, I wanted to not just create a dress that would be worn by a model and have it be perhaps forgotten. I wanted to create something that was, I wanted to create a moment. And Dita and I have worked together for several years.
You've actually created pieces for her stage work as well. Yeah.
But I also needed someone with a dancer's grace to pull off this complex piece of clothing, which is really basically a piece of machinery, if you will, because there's several thousand individual components to this dress. Each are unique. There's no two pieces alike in this gown, and they have to work together But when you see them come together, as you will see on display at LACMA on June 12th, it will become apparent to you that this is possible to create these things and make them fluid, beautiful, graceful, flowing fabric.
And in fact, the dress didn't just come out of the printer in one piece. It actually is 17 sections.
It was printed in 17 sections solely because the limitations of the size of what you can print with the printer. I mean, you could literally print that dress in one entire piece if you had a printer big enough.
Yeah.
We just didn't have a printer large enough, so we printed it in 17 sections. But even those sections are composed of hundreds and hundreds of different components that it comes out of the printer fully flexible and fluid.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, then we just link those together and we've got a dress.
Well, you also hand dyed all of these 17 sections, right, before you fasten them together.
And crystal them with thousands and thousands of Swarovski crystals.
And that was because that's Michael Schmidt touch, but also Adita Von T's touch to have a bit of sparkle.
That was Rose Apodaca talking with costume designer Michael Schmidt. They will talk at a public event Wednesday presented by the Costume Council at LACMA. And you'll also be able to see there the 3D printed dress for Dieter von Teese and some of his other amazing designs. Then on June 27th, as part of the Design Shopping Night for the Los Angeles Design Festival, Rose's store, A+R, will showcase works in 3D that will include Michael's pieces. Get more details from our website. You're listening to DNA, I'm Frances Anderton. For several weeks now, we have been airing stories about Wilshire Boulevard, produced by Edward Lifson as part of Pacific Standard Time Presents Modern Architecture in LA, and a Ciclovia that will take place June 23rd on Wilshire, from downtown to Fairfax. If you're heading west on Wilshire, the endpoint for the ride is going to be the Los Angeles County Museum of Art, which right now is itself the subject of a Pacific Standard Time Presents exhibit, The Presence of the Past, Peter Zumthor Reconsiders LACMA. But this restrained title masks the surprise you will get on seeing the show. In addition to plans and models that tell the story of the site dating back to prehistory in the tar pits, the main event in the exhibit is towards the back of the Resnick Pavilion, a huge dark grey concrete model of a dramatic new building being proposed for the site by Swiss architect Peter Zumthor. We're going to look critically at this project on a future show. But first, we're going to turn to Edward Lifson and LACMA director Michael Govan for a brief history of the site and how the new building would remake this part of Wilshire. Here's Edward Lifson.
The original LACMA buildings by William Pereira and Associates are from the 1960s. You can still see their altered remains. Some people want to save and restore them, saying they're an important part of LA history. They stood on three sides of a plaza with fountains, which made sense because it drew you in off of Wilshire. But in the 1980s, a striped and green postmodern addition changed all that, changed the buildings, the plaza, and how LACMA relates to the street. The 80s update added a long, solid wall that runs quite a ways along the Great Boulevard. It seals off the museum from the city, and the cars whiz by without making much of a connection with the major art museum in town. In 2008, LACMA added a Renzo Piano design building, which also fronts Wilshire, with two large stone walls that the art museum uses mostly to hang banners. Think cultural billboards for LA. So in the new plan, the Renzo Piano buildings remain, as would on the other side of the campus the eccentric Japanese Pavilion by Bruce Goff, but Michael Govan wants to raise at least $450 million to tear down and rebuild in between. He spent years considering the site, and as he thinks about it, an idea, a part of the campus, and what it means keeps percolating.
One of the things that's so beautiful about this campus is the La Brea tar pits. It's always been sad to me that the museum, art museum, never really embraced the tar pits in its design, and it seems so obvious as an opportunity to be looking at natural history from the perspective of civilization, if you will.
And so Govan turned not to local architectural talent, but to a Swiss architect with whom he had tried to build once before. That's the Pritzker Prize laureate Peter Zumthor. Zumtor is best known for smaller projects, including a handcrafted chapel in Germany, a spa that shows the layers of time, atmospheres, and local stone in Val, Switzerland, and two smaller art museums into which Zumtor deftly brought light and a sense of calm.
Peter Zumtor, when he faced an architectural mostly at the specifics of the site, and the site generated the materials, the ideas, and the form more than any other architect I'd ever seen. And I thought, well, what a special site we have at LACMA because of its place on Wilshire Boulevard in the most modern city, and yet next to these primordial tar pits. It's so strange. No one knows quite how to make sense of it. So I figured if anyone could make sense of it, it was Peter Zumtor. And he probably wouldn't work against the tar pits in Wilshire Boulevard, but he'd work with it.
That he did. LACMA is now showing Zumtor's preliminary model for the new building, and it all but touches the tar pits, hovering very close to them, and then carries on in an amoeba-like, dark, organic shape that, seen from above, could look like an abstracted tar pit itself. The galleries inside would be more straightforward, right-angled, with a lot of concrete. Govan expects various introductions of natural light into these galleries. And he says the visitor will not walk through the galleries in a straight line, but rather in less hierarchical patterns, to create possibilities for new connections between the various cultures represented inside the museum.
Where else would you ever get a chance to, in the 21st century, reconsider not only what's in the museum, but how it functions? If you think about it, all the museums that have been built other than LACMA in the United States, the big museums, were really built on models that were 19th century models. It's over 100 years. Times have changed, and it's not just the internet. It's the way we visit museums with families, for example, and lots of kids. So I thought, what a marvelous opportunity if you could start with a clean sheet of paper. Los Angeles might be the first museum of a new millennia with a new identity, a new point of view, not just in terms of what a building could look like, but how it functioned.
But I think maybe some of us would like to know what the building will look like.
It's an amazing thing. I don't know if I even want to call it a building. It's a set of ideas that has a form. We have a kind of a code name for it that we started a few years ago. It was called Black Flower because it has an organic form. So it pays as much homage to the tar pits as it does to modern Los Angeles. It has glass 360 degrees around, so it's open to the city on Wilshire Boulevard, towards the tar pits, towards Urban Light, the plaza on Renzo's buildings, and towards the park. It doesn't privilege one over another site, so Peter calls it a bit of a water lily floating in the city that looks in all directions. People can see in, you can see out if you're in the buildings. It's actually quite transparent from the ground or from the side because it's mostly glass. In fact, one of the innovations of the building is that it is mostly half of its open storage, which means things that are usually in the basement will be visible to people 24/7, like windows on Madison Avenue or on Rodeo Drive.
Mr. Govan, who is in full sell this building mode, compares it to Madison Avenue and Rodeo Drive. And in full learning from Las Vegas mode, or seeking to understand the true Los Angeles in all its eclectic glory, Michael Govan likes to take his architect to a certain shopping mall.
I think I probably did take Peter Zumtor to the Grove, but I do a lot of my research at the Grove about people and about how spaces need to function. One big realization was at the Grove, which relies on making money to exist. So it has to be commercially viable. And yet it's an open mall, open to the sky and to the weather. That was a big cue for me, is that, well, if the Grove can attract millions and millions of people and make a financially viable shopping mall with open space, who says the lobby of LACMA has to be inside? And that was a big revelation about the Grove. Also, the sense of people wanting to walk freely and openly, that space between the farmer's market and the Grove. And another cue for me about that space was You know, people will often complain, well, it's hard to get to museums and people don't come to LACMA in as great a number as they do at other museums because it's hard to get to. And I said, well, two blocks away is the Grove, and they have about 9 million people, as I understand it, a year. So in Los Angeles, it's not about getting there. Everything's hard to get to. It's a question of whether it's worth it when you get there.
That was Edward Lifson and Michael Govan talking about the past, present, and future Los Angeles County Museum of Art. See the model in the exhibit currently at the museum, The Presence of the Past, Peter Zumthor Reconsiders LACMA. And hear more about the building, just how will a 340,000-square-foot dark blob look and feel on an upcoming show. Thanks so much for listening to this DNA. It was produced by Ray Guana. The theme music was composed by Jason Groman. I'm Frances Anderton. Join me next week for more DNA.
I told my mother I was going to be a famous artist.
Designs a really lovely word.
Designing and building.
Postmodern stuff.